I know it's a great story. Tiger Woods' son, 11-year-old Charlie, him and Pops teeing off today in the PNC Championship in Orlando. But let's keep some lessons learned and not go overboard on the coverage of Charlie, because, to be clear, it's starting to get a little creepy. It is Honda Classic Live on ESPN 106.3, the only golf radio show in South Florida. I'm Ken Lavica. Got you until 10 o'clock, 888-760-3776, 888-760-ESPN. And we will be joined by Sean Fairholm, our golf insider, Global Golf Post. Also, Rick Harrow, the sports professor, and he will join us at 20 to 10 to get the sports business side of golf. But PNC Championship begins today, two-day father-son event at the Ritz-Carlton in Orlando, and it has been all Charlie Woods all the time. The 11-year-old has become the main attraction of that tournament, and it's fun. It's an exceptional story. Tiger Woods, someone that we cannot get enough of. We'll never get enough of Tiger Woods. He could be 85 years old and wheeling himself down the fairway at Augusta, and we will say that was the highlight of my golf day. Well, Tiger and his son Charlie, 11-year-old Charlie, who is the youngest participant in this tournament, are going to be competing today. Again, today and tomorrow at this PNC Championship. If you're not familiar with the PNC Championship, here's the deal with this. It is it started in 1995. It has had several different iterations in different locations. In fact, it's been a couple of years in Vero Beach, but is now for the last 5 years or so in Orlando at the Ritz-Carlton. And so this is just purely an exhibition. Yes, there's prize money, but this is really for fun. And it is father, it is son. Sometimes a grandson will play, sometimes a daughter will play, but generally it's father and son. And in fact, Boca Raton's Bernard Langer won with his son Jason a year ago, and Bernard, with a collection of different sons, has won this tournament four different times. But this is where it starts to get weird from Charlie's standpoint, because we have spent the last week in golf world dissecting the swing of Charlie Woods, breaking down how he drinks his water bottle like his dad, how he twirls his club like his father, how he checks his yardage book like his dad. Up, same back left pocket location for that yardage book. You get my drift. It's a little weird. So we've successfully taken this from a fun story from, oh, would you look at that? Charlie's growing up. That's really cool. We've gone from that to dissecting every single human movement that he makes and comparing it to his Hall of Fame legendary father. And that, probably based on what we've experienced with Tiger, is not the path that we should take. The way we have looked at and the way golf media is covering Charlie Woods this week, 11 years old, is it a bit over the top? 888-760-3776, 888-760-ESPN, 888-760-3776, here on Honda Classic Live. Let's not forget what we did to Tiger Woods at 2 years old on national television. His father, Earl, and him really a team, and growing his profile, and Tiger was famous before he even hit puberty. And of course, legend at Stanford, legend at the amateur level, and then went on and 82 wins later on the PGA Tour, and countless majors later, he is the arguably greatest of all time. But this is where I start to get extremely concerned about young athletes getting way too much coverage way too early. And we've seen it before. I mean, Gary Nicholas, someone who I know, someone who my co-host weekdays here on ESPN 106.3, Josh Cohen and the home team, Josh Cohen, knows intimately well. Gary Nicholas fought that, the son of Jack, as he was coming up and considering turning pro. And Gary never had a fruitful pro career. Gary is an incredible man and a great human being, but he wasn't going to be Jack. And to put those expectations on someone like that is incredibly unfair. And me, growing up in the Chicago area, being a diehard Michael Jordan fan through and through, no one will ever be greater. I don't care how good LeBron continues to be at this late age. But I remember his sons, and one in particular, going to UCF. And this was supposed to be the second coming, and he didn't even last 4 full years at UCF, because it's really nearly impossible to give the type of attention to someone like that and to put up this standard and to make these comparisons and have them live up to it. But let's focus specifically here on Tiger. Before we put all of the spotlight on 11-year-old Charlie Woods, and before we write all these features, and before we put up these cute little videos on ESPN.com of them taking practice swings at the range at the very same time using the very same technique, let's talk about Tiger. Tiger Woods, like I said, a phenom at 2, a superstar before puberty, and then went on to become what we know him today. So we built him up, we built him up, we built him up. We love to write about him. We love to talk about his intensity. We love to focus on just how locked in he was on breaking Jack Nicklaus's majors record, his preparation, his ability to perform under pressure. We've never seen anything like this. He grew the game to new heights. The Tiger push is a very real thing that brought golf to the forefront and very nearly thrust it into the big four leagues here in the United States and in North America. Tiger Woods is the biggest thing to ever happen to golf in our lifetimes. This is greater than anybody who might be old enough to have Jack Nicklaus in their wheelhouse or Arnold Palmer. Tiger Woods is the biggest thing to ever happen to the game of golf, the biggest phenom ever in golf. And then what happened when he made a mistake? Then what happened when he had transgressions in his marriage? When he finally showed that he wasn't some perfect robot, that he was flawed? The same people that used Tiger to build their profile and write these glowing exposés and push themselves into prominent writing positions tore Tiger down, inch by inch, limb by limb, and would not let it go. Tiger Woods, a man who strayed in his marriage, something millions of men do, really probably on a daily basis. But Tiger had to stand and have a press conference about it, make a statement about it, lose sponsors over it, have countless talking heads head over to the Golf Channel and question his character when it had really nothing to do with his game and how many majors he had won, and how dramatic his 2008 U.S. Open victory was. It was all, Tiger isn't who we thought he was. This man has penance to pay. He'll never be the same. His career and his brand is tarnished forever. And it's almost as if, and maybe I'm just too biased in this. Maybe I'm just too biased because I'm very pro-Tiger. But part of the reason I am as pro-Tiger as I am, it didn't used to be like that, but part of the reason that I am as pro-Tiger as I am is because his treatment, based on how he was handled as a youngster, into his adolescent years, into his early professional years, into his superstar transcendent years, to have those people then take delight, take glee in pounding him into the ground, it was disgusting. And this is why I see all of this focus and all of these cameras focused on Charlie, 11 years old, playing in a tournament that's really meant for fun this weekend, a chance to spend some time with Dad up in Orlando, but you can see the same parallels. It's Tiger's kid. Quick, everybody write a feature. Everybody have an opinion. Everybody take a photo. Everybody make a comparison. And you want to know what that does? That creates unattainable goals, unattainable expectations, and also sets Charlie up to not only fail because it's impossible for him to reach what the expectations are, but it sets him up to be a pawn at the hands of those who cover this sport. And I'm very much in the media. I am a media person, proudly a media person, in a world where that's taken on a negative connotation. But I know how media works as well. And media wants to make someone look amazing and follow them to and from and make a name off of that until that entity slips up and then it's time to pounce. And you can see the same similarities with what Tiger Woods went through with Earl to what hopefully doesn't happen, but you can see the base being set for Charlie with Tiger. The coverage of 11-year-old Charlie Woods this week in advance of the PGA Championship. Over the top, 888-760-3776, 888-760-ESPN, 888-760-3776. We take your call here on Honda Classic Live. Now, fortunately, it doesn't look like Tiger is taking the path of forcing Charlie into golf. Does Charlie play? Yes. Is Charlie pretty good? Yep. Won a couple of nine-hole tournaments. But, at least right now, it doesn't appear as if, and just this is based off of things that Tiger says, and honestly, based off of things I hear from people that spend time around the woods, because Tiger and Elon have done a really good job of putting the kids around other youngsters in the area, playing other sports, soccer, basketball, golf. So it seems like Charlie's going to be allowed to take his own path. It's not going to be something that's predestined. Tiger's letting Charlie be a kid. But I would hope Tiger sees what's happened this week where Golf.com, Golf Digest, Golf Channel, any entity that covers golf, it's all Charlie. ESPN, Bob Harrig. Oh, look at Charlie's swing. Oh, look, he drinks his water bottle the same as Tiger. Oh, man, look at where that yardage book is. It's in his left pocket. Tiger does that. Oh, man, I haven't seen this many people fawn over an 11-year-old since 10-year-old girls were fawning over 11-year-old Justin Bieber 13, 14 years ago. It's gotten a little out of hand. It's gotten a little weird. And to be clear, this past week and how we've looked at Charlie Woods and how he's been covered, an 11-year-old covered by the media prior to the PNC Championship has been really creepy. And that's your opening drive brought to you by Tire Kingdom. It's the season to save at Tire Kingdom. Now through the 1st of January, save up to $100 instantly on 4 select tires with paid installation. Save on top brands like Continental, Cooper, Nitto, and Goodyear. Plus, use your Tire Kingdom store credit card. Get a $50 mail-in rebate on qualifying purchases of $500 or more. The holidays mean family gatherings, socially distanced and safe, of course, and road trips. And Tire Kingdom has everything you need to ensure your vehicle is travel-ready. Whether you need tires or auto service, their convenient hours and locations make it easy to get the service you need. And going on now, schedule a free service check. That's battery, brake, alignment, and get 15% off any recommended repairs. Did you know that Tire Kingdom is now offering a vehicle disinfecting service? For only $29.99, their specially trained technicians will disinfect and deodorize your vehicle's interior, including all high-touch areas like the upholstery, floor mats, steering wheel, gear shift, door handles, and more with a hospital-grade, multi-purpose germicidal detergent safe for all surfaces in 30 minutes or less. Schedule an appointment today at Tire Kingdom. That is absolutely excellent. And Interstate Battery, save $20 after rebate. If it seems to be taking longer for your car to start, your battery could be running down. Let the experts at Tire Kingdom keep you going with a free battery check. And for a limited time, get a $20 rebate on select Interstate batteries. That's Tire Kingdom. Make sure to schedule an appointment. Get your car set to go. Get it right at Tire Kingdom. Find a local Tire Kingdom near you right here in South Florida. And again, log on to TireKingdom.com. I'm Ken Levicka, Sean Fairholme, Global Golf Post. When we return, what does he think about this coverage of Charlie Woods this week as he plays with his dad, Tiger, in the PNC Championship? Plus, why was the U.S. Women's Open maybe the best major? Let's just let Charlie Woods be an 11-year-old. That's just my thought about it. Because again, we loved to cover Tiger Woods. We loved to make him this incredible superstar, this transcendent talent, this legend, this deity. And then once he made a mistake in his marriage, we really enjoyed tearing him down. And I do not need to see his son go through the same issue. PNC Championship this week, father-son up at the Ritz-Carlton in Orlando. And let's go ahead and get a full dose of golf insight with our golf insider from Global Golf Post. You read his work at globalgolfpost.com. He is my friend, and he is our expert. It is Sean Fairholme with us here on Honda Classic Live. Sean, good morning. I know that it's probably busy for you here with a lead-in into the holidays. Before we actually talk about the subject at hand, what are the holiday plans for the Fairholmes?
Not too much. We're going to be going down to South Florida. We got a little small group of us here. We're not doing the full family Christmas, just to not spread COVID as much. So we'll have a small group, but we'll go down and play a little golf in South Florida. But we'll keep it light this Christmas.
Excellent. Not bad though. Get down here, hit them around a little bit. Where do you typically play when you come down to South Florida?
I'll do Palm Beach National, and then actually go a little bit further south to Osprey, which is a beautiful course out in Boca.
Yep.
So a little bit all over the place, but Palm Beach County for the most part.
I absolutely love Osprey, actually. Florida Atlantic, their men's golf team has a tournament each year, and it moved to Osprey just a couple of years ago. And it was my first time there. I was stunned at really how nice that course is.
Beautiful practice facility, too. It's a great place to go hit balls, chip around, and with the three different nines there, too. It's a really they can kind of spread out play and everything, and a very nice design course as well. I very much enjoy Osprey.
All right, Sean, so let's talk about PNC Championship and really one storyline in particular, and that's really the only storyline that's come out of it, for better or worse, and that is Charlie Woods, Tiger's 11-year-old son. And I'm all for fun stories and good feeling stories, and it is cool to see Charlie out there with his dad, because you've seen him sporadically over the years, and you really saw him front and center after Tiger won the Masters in 2019. But this week it's gotten to a point where it's wow, look at Charlie spin the club like Tiger, and look, he's wearing his hat like Tiger, and look, that yardage book is in the same pocket as his dad puts it in. And I just find it to be, and I know it's a slow time right now in golf, but all of this focus with all the major outlets on an 11-year-old, I don't care if it's Tiger Woods' son or not, it's a little over the top.
My colleague Ron Green Jr., who's a great writer for Global Golf Post, he was telling me the other day, kind of joking, that this tournament may be one of the top-rated watched golf tournaments of the year. he said he wouldn't doubt if it was maybe in the top two or three, when you consider even considering the Masters and U.S. Open and all these other tournaments. And I totally agree. I mean, you just Google Charlie Woods right now, and there are columns out of everywhere from every single source. I mean, this is like the U.S. Open or Masters right now. I mean, Global Golf Post is not covering this, thank goodness. But, I mean, there are just columns from everywhere. And it's kind of like the social media Super Bowl right now with what you're saying, people having all sorts of videos. Like, it's a little creepy, isn't it? People are taking videos of this kid everywhere, being like, oh, yeah, look at him, look at his yardage book. Yeah, he loves his yardage book. Like, he's 11 years old.
Right.
I love what Justin Thomas said. He said, you know, they asked him what golfer Charlie Woods should be compared to, whether he should be compared to his dad, and Justin Thomas said he shouldn't be compared to anybody. He's 11. He should
right.
be just playing. He should come out in the golf tournament, have fun, you know, play the game, play the 36-hole scramble, have fun, and then go back and play some video games. He's 11. Let's not talk about his college recruitment. Let's not talk about anything. Like, let's just let the kid breathe, because we've seen this in the past, Ken. We've seen, Gary Nicholas, you know, Jack's son.
Exactly.
He was put in the son of Sports Illustrated. And, you know, look, I mean, not that Gary Nicholas is going to be a fantastic player. I mean, he made the PGA Tour and, you know, lost the playoffs. He was a pretty good player when you look at the overall scheme of things. But, you know, he was never going to live up to his dad being an 18-time major champion. It was an unrealistic expectation. I really hope we let this kid breathe and just have a normal life. But I have some doubts, Ken. I really
agree
with it.
Sean, I'm with you. I'm completely with you. And if this week is any indication, then it's going to only get thicker and thicker, the coverage from here. And we see it right now with Bronny James. Now, it's a little bit different because Bronny is in high school and he will soon be a college athlete. And so it's a little bit different. But I think you see it an awful lot at the golf level because you do have younger players going amateur and then going pro a little bit earlier in their lives. But I see it as well here in Palm Beach County in the Treasure Coast with high school football players, where there's a lot of hype early on because they're the son of a legend, or they are someone who a major school has identified at like age 13 as a potential prospect. And it's very hard to live up to those expectations. But I also feel like Tiger is the biggest cautionary tale of all of this. And I want to make something abundantly clear, too, before I get to that. Like, I'm not questioning Tiger's parenting here. Like, he's going to have a weekend to play golf with his son in a father-son tournament. Like, that is not anything that Tiger should be criticized about. But Tiger, someone who was, before even went into puberty, a superstar, and the golf world knew of him, and we built him up, and then he made one mistake, and we loved to tear him down, and he was never the same after that. I would hate to see that happen next generation in the Woods family.
Yeah, I think the storyline this week should just be, yeah, this is a great father-son moment where they're able to enjoy this. And could you ever imagine Tiger playing in this event in the past?
Right.
Even if he did have a son or a daughter.
It's very humanizing.
I know. It really is. It is very humanizing. I think this is a great moment to kind of see that Tiger has come this far to where he's being so open. I mean, this is the king of privacy. He named his yacht Privacy. I mean, this is somebody who has really made his entire career, and kind of justifiably so, given everything the media has put him through. He's made his entire career out to get away from all this and to shield his kids from all this scrutiny. And the fact that he is putting Charlie out there kind of in front of this, Charlie did not have a press conference this week, which is a fantastic idea and a very good parenting move on Tiger's part. And I think that this kind of goes to show that Tiger really wants this to be kind of just a hit and giggle 36 hole. Hey, let's kind of, get out there and have fun and, get out into this environment. They're playing with Justin Thomas and Mike Thomas, which Mike Thomas is Justin's dad. Yep. and a PGA professional and a really good guy as well. But it's a great pairing. It's a really good environment to kind of acclimate Charlie to this environment. I think it's a really good moment for him to just kind of go ahead and have fun with his dad, because he's going to play in events like this in the future, and he's going to play in higher profile tournaments if he chooses golf as a path. And it's a great moment to just kind of bond with his dad. I think that should be the storyline. Not looking at this kid like, hey, he's going to be the next Tiger Woods, or hey, look at how he twirls his club. He looks just like his dad. Like, we can't wait until the 2030 Masters. Like, let's just slow down a little bit here.
Sean Fairholm, Global Golf Post, globalgolfpost.com. And so it'll be the Woods and the Thomases going off at 11:48 Eastern time from the Ritz-Carlton there in Orlando, PNC Championship. And again, the defending champion is Boca Raton's own Bernard Longer with his son Jason. What in the world did we see at the U.S. Women's Open last weekend? We had the equivalent of a golf major buzzer beater, A-Lim Kim, with back-to-back-to-back birdies to win and to really steal the U.S. Women's Open. That's the highest drama of the year, period, I think, in professional golf.
Yeah, how about the masked winner? that was pretty cool coming down the stretch. I mean, it looked like Hibaka Shibuno was going to kind of steal that golf tournament, which she had looked like she was going to steal a couple of golf tournaments in the past. She did it the Women's British Open last year. She was able to steal that golf tournament. Looked like she was going to kind of keep steady down the stretch at the U.S. Women's Open. But I really think that the weather and the conditions at Champions Golf Club just kind of got to a lot of players. I mean, that golf course down the stretch was brutal. And you look at the Cypress course there at Champions. It's narrow. The greens are very firm. And it just goes to show you that you have a player like A-Lim Kim come down the stretch and just hit a couple of quality golf shots, and you could pick up two or three strokes in just a heartbeat there. And it really was a great drama for that. And, you look at a U.S. Open U.S. Women's Open type of venue like that and how they set it up. I thought the USGA did a terrific job in that and really kind of opening it up for a player. Now, you know, Aylin Kim, I had never heard of Aylin Kim going into that golf tournament. I don't think a lot of people had, but it's a great opportunity for a player like that who, you know, is not as well known, who's kind of coming up in the ranks, to kind of hit it, you know, one or two really quality golf shots down the stretch, and now we know her name. And that's kind of what major championship golf is all about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. On Sunday, as I'm watching this, and you can't relate to it as much being a Florida guy, but you did play at NC State, so you certainly played some cold rounds in your day. But me growing up in the Chicago area, just going out in an early April where the snow is gone and things are thawing a little bit, but there's a wind and it's in the 40s and it's just really raw out. I was looking at that Sunday, and I'm like, I've played in these conditions before, and it is miserable, let alone having to play for a major championship. I mean, that was a battle of attrition on Sunday.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I can remember some rounds at NC State where, you know, you're out there, it's cold, it's windy, it's 45 degrees, you have the beanie on. And, you know, it's absolutely, you know, you hit a golf shot a little bit, you know, towards the leading edge, and you sculled a little bit, and you could kind of feel it in your hands, like a baseball bat, where you get a little bit inside in your hands, and you get a stinger. You get those in golf as well. And you know, luckily, a player like Aylin Kim and those players at the U.S. Women's Open they're not hitting too many on the leading edge with a four iron, so they're in a little bit better position to hit those flush. But no, I totally can understand, you know, when you get out there in those conditions and the ball is probably going, you know, literally 10 to 15 yards, not as far, a little bit shorter, given those cold conditions and sometimes the wind as well. So it definitely kind of threw a wrench into everything with how the players had to attack that golf course. And it really kind of brought everybody closer to even par as that tournament went on. It was not a tournament where 10 or 15 under was going to ever win.
Nope. And so, again, high drama as Aylin Kim wins the U.S. Women's Open, a December version of the U.S. Women's Open. And Sunday definitely looked like it was a December tournament. Sean Fairholme, Global Golf Post, globalgolfpost.com. He's our golf insider, and he joins us each Saturday here on Honda Classic Live. I am Ken LaVica. And so we had the PGA Tour come out this week and say that with a vaccine coming, they're not anticipating it's going to be a necessity for players or for fans, depending on what capacity is at these tournaments. And we do know that at least to start on the West Coast swing of the tour season, it's going to be very reduced capacity and really only going to be guests of players, except for Phoenix, where it's just going to be about 6,000 per day. But I thought that this was a very good way for Jay Monahan to handle it, not forcing a vaccine. And it also keeps criticism away from the PGA for potentially trying to push themselves up the priority list for this. This would not be the time to start making vaccines mandatory and making them available to golfers and to fans and making it seem like they're skipping in line. I think all of this is very reasonable from the PGA Tour.
I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think there are optics at play here, right, with Jay Monahan not wanting to say, hey, we need a vaccine to get to our players right away. I think he knows that, you know, we need frontline healthcare workers getting the vaccine right now. And we also need, you know, people of prominence who are lawmakers, things like that, to kind of show that the vaccine is real. Not PGA Tour golfers. I don't think PGA Tour golfers are anywhere near the front of the line for getting this. And saying that it's not mandated, you know, there are going to be, I would assume, the majority of golfers out there who are, of course, going to get this vaccine eventually when it gets out to the general public, but not anytime soon. And I think, you know, we will see fans trickle back. You mentioned Phoenix with, I believe, you know, around 6,000 to 8,000 fans coming back. And then it looks like the Players Championship as well will have a similar allotment of fans. When they hit the Florida swing, Jay Monahan seems very optimistic that they will be able to increase that number. He wasn't showing his hand during that press conference last week, but it looked like, you can kind of tell from his voice, he was a little bit expecting that the Florida swing Florida being a little bit more open compared to other parts of the country, may be able to have a few more fans.
Yep.
But I think he knows overall that this will be, it'll be a slow burn here, right? We're not going to all of a sudden open it up and we're going to have 30,000 fans showing up at the golf tournament. It's going to be kind of week by week, and who knows? Maybe even when we get to Kiawah for the PGA Championship, and we get to even Torrey Pines for the U.S. Open back down in the summer, we may not even have a full allotment of fans for those golf tournaments. We may have to just wait and see where this takes us, because I don't know if anybody really knows fully at this point. We'll have to wait and see. It's possible, but we just don't know at this point.
Well, luckily here on Honda Classic Live, we know some people, and so we'll be able to get a real good insight into how the Honda Classic is going to handle whatever capacity they're allowed and how they're going to set it up for safety. And I believe that before we turn the new year here in about 2 weeks, we'll have Ken Kennerly, Executive Director, on to at least discuss some of the preliminaries with that. Next week on Honda Classic Live, we'll go ahead and give our superlatives for the year. We'll get Sean Fairholme's golfer of the year, most improved golfer of the year, course of the year, all those fun things. But I'm not ready to put a cap yet on 2020 as much as we would like to, even though all of the major tours are looking ahead, and that includes the Rolex Series on the European Tour, reduced to just 4 events for 2021. And it seems like, Sean, this is being done just to reduce as much travel as possible overseas.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I know that they had at one point, 7 or 8 events in the Rolex series, and to just try to get that down to 4 events. It makes a lot of sense to be able to reduce travel, and we're at that point right now, and dealing with the pandemic and dealing with everything that the European Tour has had to do with the UK swing. They have a lot more to deal with than the PGA Tour, because they're dealing with what, 30 or so countries. When they're putting out a schedule. So to do this, I think it makes a lot of sense, and that's kind of been their theme throughout this entire thing, is to try to only have maybe one country or two countries involved, and to try to put all those events at once. So it does make a lot of sense.
Sean, awesome as always. Really appreciate the time, and we will talk to you at least one more time before we get ourselves into the new year, and we'll give our end-of-year awards as well. But Sean Fairholme, Global Golf Post, globalgolfpost.com. Read all of his outstanding work. Sean, have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll talk to you here in the coming weeks, okay?
All right, sounds great.
Sean Fairholme, Global Golf Post, and again, globalgolfpost.com. The PGA Tour not requiring vaccines. What will this do for potential galleries? What will this do for potential fan impact as we get especially towards the Florida swing? Rick Haro, the sports professor. He's my co-host, Wednesday's Boardroom, presented by the Honda Classic, and talks about the sports business side of golf. Saturdays here on Honda Classic Live. He'll have some answers for us when we return. Honda Classic Live, ESPN 106. Hey, a reminder, every Wednesday night here on ESPN 106.3, it's the state of Florida's only sports business radio show, The Boardroom, presented by the Honda Classic, where myself and the sports professor Rick Haro hit everything from the upcoming baseball schedule to the restructured NBA regular season, not to mention the NFL playoffs and whether or not games could move, maybe the Super Bowl being pushed back due to COVID. We cover absolutely everything from contracts to sponsorships and everything in between. The Boardroom, presented by the Honda Classic, Wednesday night, 6 o'clock on ESPN 106.3. And speaking of Rick Haro, well, here he is. He is the sports professor. Like I said, he is the co-host of The Boardroom, presented by the Honda Classic. He also is the author of the book, The Sports Business Handbook, at that wherever books are sold. Also, mascotbooks.com. You hear him on Reuters International and nationally syndicated radio, and you see him on Fox Sports Florida and Sun Sports. And he is joining me early morning, Saturday morning, here on ESPN 106.3. Rick, good morning, sir.
What do you want? Look, I'm 2 hours and 20 minutes away from my Northwestern. This is the closest they're going to get this afternoon. So I gotta get excited until about 12:10. But you never really know. And then you realize after 7 o'clock last night, as the whatever. What was that first game last night? Ball State put it on Buffalo.
Ball State and Buffalo, the MAC championship.
The MAC championship game, yeah. Now you realize there will be college and or pro football every day now until January 3.
Is exactly right, including Tuesday night's RoofClaim.com Boca Raton Bowl with UCF and BYU, which is arguably the best matchup of the bowl season down at FAU Stadium. So looking forward to that for sure. This weekend, and we've been discussing this throughout the course of the show this morning, actually not this weekend, today, and they tee off just before noon. It's Tiger Woods and his son, 11-year-old Charlie. And, Rick, I'm telling you, I'm seeing this coverage, and I know it's a slow time, and I know people need column space to hit, and they have deadlines. But this coverage of Charlie Woods and all of his mannerisms being the same as his father, I'm all for good stories, but it's getting a little bit weird. How have you consumed it?
Weird but appropriate in the business of golf, because what people in the industry want to see, I think, is a life after Tiger for another 30 years, maybe a moral, stronger, more intense Tiger, maybe an old-time Tiger that people understand and say, all right, you know, I see a little bit of Tiger in him. It is a time of year where golf is struggling for notoriety, but, man, the Masters and the Women's Open and then the second coming of Tiger Woods, so here's the bottom line. Are you going to watch some of it?
I probably will watch a little bit of it, yes.
Of course you will. All right, so stop being cynical.
I knew that a scolding was coming. What you say, though, is 100% right, that anything Tiger is going to make headlines, and golf and the golf media industry is going to hope that there is Tiger interest for the next 30 years. But at some point, isn't not only golf media, but the game itself going to have to figure out a path and ply a path post-Tiger? When is that going to happen?
Yeah, we've got a few really good guys coming up that are going to drive the next Tiger. I mean, I can't wait for Jason Day to... Oh, all right, how about Jordan Spieth? All right. So, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, everybody'd be answering, well, you know, wait for the next Tiger, just like Jack, Gary, and Arnold. You got the next guys? Well, maybe, but until there's a next guy who puts it all together on a sustained basis, you know, I don't mean DeChambeau for a week and then flamed out. Now, he may be the guy. He's a weird guy, but he may be the guy. And basically, Justin... You know, Justin has a chance to win, you know, the next 90 events, and therefore he becomes. But listen, that's part of the answer. And until that time, I don't think Tiger in his 40s will be the story unless, you know, and maybe he is, because until people say he's not going to win another major, we've still got the Jack record. And I think the Jack record carries enough. And frankly, he's owed an opportunity to be center stage until he either gets it or passes.
So that actually brings me to this, and this is just purely from how golf wants to market it and that standpoint. For baseball, it was the home run record. Prior to that, it was baseball's Iron Man streak. The NFL with the touchdown passes record, even though now between Brady and Breeze, that's getting broken and rebroken again every single week. For golf, is the most hallowed record that majors record from Jack?
It certainly looks like it, because it may be the hardest to beat, and it is the one that we've been trying to get to for a while. Before Tiger, nobody thought there'd be a chance, and now everybody's stringing it along for a few years because who knows if it's going to happen. And then with the Bonds breaking of the home run record, everybody thought it was great, then it was steroid-induced, now we have some people near it. I think it's certainly the most hallowed record in golf. It may be one of the most hallowed records in sports. And, you know, check back with me in 8 years. Let's see if it's Tiger.
Rick Caro, the sports professor. Follow him on Twitter at Rick Caro. Also read his book, The Sports Business Handbook, wherever books are sold, and a great stocking stuffer as well. And he's my co-host, Boardroom, presented by the Honda Classic every Wednesday night here on ESPN 106.3. Jay Monahan came out and said that vaccinations for COVID are going to be a choice for players. They are not going to be a necessity for players and for fans as we get into 2021. I thought he struck every chord very well. And I think the biggest thing about that is not only choice for players and fans, but also it doesn't put the PGA Tour in a situation where it's perceived that its players and the organization are jumping in line in terms of priority for who receives the vaccination. I think that the way that this was handled was a total no-brainer and very professional from the PGA Tour.
I suspect until we see some blowback about why don't you make it mandatory, and then, but we've already done that. I mean, sure. You know, the immediate naysayers are going to say why not, and then I think over time it's like everything else in society. People will be looking to their own medical professionals and their own information from hopefully media that will bring the real facts to bear. And there's a lot of discussion in the workplace, not just sports. You know, can employers make it mandatory? And we're evolving that. And you know, employers cannot make certain vaccinations mandatory today under labor law, but this is an exigent circumstance. This is a virus that has killed over 300,000 people. So I think ultimately, this is one of those issues that the courts may decide, not as it relates to the tour, but as it relates to employers.
These are some of the topics, that one especially, that we have already discussed a little bit in terms of other sports on the Boardroom presented by the Honda Classic, and I have a feeling that's going to be a major topic moving forward for many of the leagues. The PGA Tour, though, for now saying, nope, it is a choice, not a necessity as we move forward. And it does make me think, though, Rick, that once we hit the Florida swing of the PGA Tour, there's no doubt, just based on how this state has been run through the pandemic, that leadership in the state is going to want as many people as possible at these venues, and that includes PGA National for the Honda Classic. And I'm fascinated in a couple of weeks to have you and I talk with Ken Kennerly, the executive director of the Honda Classic, because I just wonder how these tournament directors and these heads of these tournaments balance safety measures with leadership that says, hey, you know, if it's open, let's bring the people in.
And, you know, Ken Kennerly has had some history because Hollis Kavner and he worked together on a lot of things, including his company, ProLinx, and they had a very successful tournament in South Dakota on the champions level. Their governor said open it all up. And, you know, everybody is finding his own way. I noticed today, if you look at the statistics, not relevant for anybody but geeks, but I'm just going through yesterday, and congratulations to the Oregon Ducks and their Pac-12 championship game. And you look at the stats, and everybody always puts capacity down as far as attendance is concerned. But the Coliseum, I think that Pac-12 and Larry Scott said, all right, we're gonna mess with people. So if you look at the attendance line, it says one. One person. I've never seen that before. So, you know, listen, the bottom line is everybody, different strokes, different folks. Everybody will have state, local regulations. They've got to clear their plans. Look at the NHL right now in Canada. Look at the Raptors in Tampa. And it's all going to evolve. And the thing you ought to listen to is not necessarily the conclusion from people like Ken, although obviously down here we care, but the process. What they go through to make that decision, which will be fascinating.
Well, you
and wonderful, by the way. I know you used wonderful this morning, so everything's wonderful.
I did. Well, I figured I would perk up your day by calling you wonderful, and it's because you are. You brighten my day, Rick Caro.
I've never really heard you use words that are larger than two syllables in general, but wonderful is great. Thank you. You're wonderful, too.
That's what I get for a compliment, is a knock on my vernacular. Thank you, Rick Caro. Rick, really appreciate it, bud. We'll talk to you this week, and we'll sneak in a pre-Christmas boardroom, and I hope you have a great holiday, okay?
Yeah, of course, you too, my friend. We'll get together over the holidays, too. See you. Thanks. Bye.
All right, buddy. Rick Harrell, the sports professor, on Twitter again, at Rick Harrell, and he's the author of the book, The Sports Business Handbook. It's the most comprehensive sports business book ever written, period. And I wouldn't just say that loosely. That is an absolute fact, with contributions from Jack Nicklaus, from Don Shula, and so many massive names in the sports industry. That's The Sports Business Handbook, wherever books are sold, or log on to mascotbooks.com. We'll get you updated on the FedEx Cup standings, where we sit here as we near the Christmas holiday in this 2020-2021 PGA Tour season. We'll refresh your memory on the leaders right now when we come back. It's Honda Classic Live on ESPN 106.3. Next week here on Honda Classic Live, it'll be a best of edition of Honda Classic Live, where we will revisit our conversations from 2020 with the likes of Ernie Els and Bernard Langer, Trevor Immelman, amongst others. So relive some of our best interviews, our most insightful, our most entertaining interviews, our guests from 2020. Ernie Els, as well as Bernard Langer, Trevor Immelman. It is Honda Classic Live Best Of next Saturday, 9 a.m. right here on ESPN 106.3. But then we will have a live New Year's Eve edition where myself and Sean Fairholm of Global Golf Post will give our superlatives of 2020, including Player of the Year, Most Improved Player of the Year, Best Course of the Year, Biggest Moment of the Year. We will go full-fledged down that list before we turn the calendar into 2021. I am Ken Lavica, and it is Honda Classic Live. I want to thank Sean Fairholm for yet another insightful edition appearance here on Honda Classic Live, and also Rick Harrell, the sports professor. You'll hear us again Wednesday for the Boardroom presented by the Honda Classic. A reminder that the PGA Tour has the PNC Championship this weekend. This is the father-son tournament, won last year by Bernard and Jason Langer. Bernard, the Boca Raton resident, it is Tiger Woods and his 11-year-old son Charlie Woods' debut in this tournament, and they tee off at 11:48 Eastern Time. The PGA Tour gets back to FedEx Cup point play at the Plantation Course at Kapalua, the Century Tournament of Champions. That'll be January 6th through the 10th. Tony Finau has already committed to that tournament. And speaking of the FedEx Cup, let's take a quick glance at where we stand here with the FedEx Cup standings. Again, this is just before the Christmas holiday, and we just have a couple of tournaments in our back pocket here in this 2020-2021 season. But no surprise, Dustin Johnson, the Jupiter resident, right now leads the FedEx Cup standings. FedEx Cup champion from a year ago, not to mention the tournament champion. Bryson DeChambeau sits second, with Victor Hovland right behind him. Stewart Cink and Patrick Cantlay are 4 and 5. Carlos Ortiz, Jason Kokrak, Justin Thomas, the Jupiter resident, Matthew Wolf, also of Jupiter, and Sergio Garcia round out your top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings. If you want to listen to any part of this morning's Honda Classic Live, our discussions about the over-the-top coverage of Charlie Woods as he embarks on his PNC Championship appearance later this afternoon, or the discussion about vaccinations and the PGA Tour, or a recap of last week's U.S. Women's Open, just the high drama on the final three holes in Texas. You can go to soundcloud.com/ESPN West Palm. That's soundcloud.com/ESPN West Palm and access it all. I want to thank Joe Rigotti for making sure things ran smoothly on this Saturday morning. For Sean Fairholm of Global Golf Post and Rick Harrow, the sports professor, I'm Ken Lavica. Heat Weekly with Tommy Tighe coming up next right here on ESPN 106.3.